You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, January 5th, 2014. No, excuse me, 2015. Holy cow, it's a new year.
Whoa.
Episode 136. Hi, guys. I'm Rob. That's Jason. New year. Exciting stuff. We're recording this actually the day before the new year, but shortly after Christmas. How was your Christmas, sir?
It was good. It was good.
Yeah, did you get anything good?
My dad got me a subwoofer.
A subwoofer?
Subwoofer.
Yeah, you're a big AV guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You're big into audio. You're an audiophile?
No, not at all. I'm not an audiophile. I'm not a videophile. I don't think I'm any kind of file.
Do you even
really want to be a file? That sounds creepy.
Do you even have a home theater's like speakers and stuff?
The surround sound system sitting over there in that box.
In that box, how long has
it
been?
That my dad got me for my birthday back in August.
Yeah, okay.
So
you're big on that.
No. We're going to have the construction happening down here soon in the next week or two, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
So we're waiting till the construction's done before we...
Fair enough.
Start putting fancy stuff up.
All right.
And we have to paint as well. So once the construction's done, we'll paint. And then we will...
So the next time we record, there'll be half-built shelves behind us?
50-50, maybe. Yeah. I hope so, but we'll see.
Okay. All right. We'll find out.
Next time we record, there could be full-built shelves, but I'm not betting on it. Yeah. I'm going to bet maybe half.
So okay. Right on.
The room will look a little smaller. So
yeah. Well, that's a good-sized room. So, it's all right.
Well, there's just some... I mean... Once the shelves are built, all this crap over here will get put in there.
Yeah, things will go into the shelves, and so there'll be room.
There won't be anything out. And then we'll move that fridge, too, and that's going to make some big space.
Gotcha.
Yeah, the people from Something From Nothing will get a nice new view.
Oh, man, all kinds of exciting stuff.
Likely next time we record, it's going to be all junky back there.
Progress.
And then after that, then I'll start turning the camera farther out so people can see it. Because I purposely angle my camera in so they can just see my back desk and a little bit over here, and they can see, like, R2 in the distance.
Yep.
So they don't see all the kids' stuff over there, the random things I have strewn about.
Well, you have kids, so there's going to be random crap everywhere.
The other cool thing I got for Christmas were those pillows.
Yeah, those are nice pillows, all the comic book covers on them.
What did you get for Christmas? I know this already, listeners. I'm just pretending here.
Well, I didn't actually get it for Christmas.
What did you get for Christmas that allowed you to get something else?
Right, my dad gave me some cash for Christmas, and so I bought a wad, a roll, and
some bills.
Because he felt guilty because I don't know why I feel guilty, because he couldn't come up with... Oh, he forgot my birthday this year. That's what it was.
Oh.
So he felt guilty about that, so he gave us a roll of 20s, so we bought a PS4. And that actually just showed up from Amazon today.
And you're not there playing.
And I'm not there. I had to... I got the shipping confirmation like 10 minutes before I went to lunch at work today, so I zoomed home real fast. Or the delivery confirmation,
right?
So I zoomed home real fast because it was snowing, and I didn't want that box to sit out in the snow. So I zoomed home and I put the thing inside and I quick slapped together a sandwich and wolfed that down, then zoomed back to work and made it back to work 10 minutes late from lunch. And then, of course, we had to run a bunch of errands after work today. So run the errands and I get home. And again, I have enough time to open the box and look at it and go, oh, cool. And then slap together a sandwich. No, I'm sorry. Microwave some pizza rolls and wolf those down and come over here. So
what's silly is you told your boss like at like 4:30 when we got out of a meeting, you were like, got a PS4 sitting at home. I want to go home. And he's like, go home. And you're like, oh,
no, because my wife also works there and she would not have been able to go home.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So actually, she probably could have. But
if you'd have called him from lunch and been like, dude, I'm going to be late. I just got my PS4. I need to get it set up. He'd have been like, do it. I guarantee he'd have been like,
he probably would have said, stay home. I don't care.
Yeah.
Take the rest of the day.
Just take the rest of the day off, man. You deserve it. Play some PlayStation.
No, it's fine, though. Yeah, so that's my main Christmas action there. Yeah. And my sister's-in-law gave me a bunch of beer, and that's good.
That's never bad.
Yeah, nice variety.
Beer can be bad, but variety of beer is nice. Mm-hmm. Try some stuff.
Yeah.
Have you been playing anything lately?
I've been playing Prison Architect.
Oh, gosh. You and Prison Architect.
Dude. Well, last time I talked about Startopia, which is the game that I got at the same time that I bought Prison Architect.
Yeah.
I wish that I hadn't bought Startopia. It's a good game, but I pretty much just want to play Prison Architect for the rest of my life. It's super good. It's super good. It's a Steam. It's on early access on Steam. I think it's only like $14 or something.
I bet you're going to stop playing it now.
Why?
because you got
because I just jinxed it. Oh, because I got a PS4. Well, no, because there are days, there are times, plenty of times when Christine wants to use the PlayStation.
She kicks you out, so then you
and then I go up to the computer upstairs. Yeah, so that's fine with me. Man, Prison Architect. It's management sim, right? So SimCity and all that stuff where you're just right. managing a system and it's great and it's 2D, you know, there's no 3D graphics in it at all, and it's top down and you build this prison from scratch. And it's very satisfying and you know, you feel like you're really accomplishing something. And I played it all last weekend, the whole Christmas break, basically. I played Prison Architect and I got a pretty good sized prison going, and then all of a sudden a riot broke out in the canteen.
Uh-huh.
And then it spread into the cell block, and I put the whole prison on lockdown, of course. But they murdered all my guards. And every time I would hire a new guard and send him in, they would murder him because I hadn't yet taken the time to, you know, build an armory and hadn't armed my guards, nor had I built a kennel yet, so I didn't have dogs that I could send in. So now there were just a bunch of prisoners just rampant inside the cell block and in the canteen and in the kitchen in my
prison. Is there literally nothing you can do now?
I don't know. I'm not good enough at the game to know how to fix it. So I think I'm just going to start over. Learn what,
you build an armory without having any guards in there?
No, you see, there's a progression. You gotta, before you can build an armory, you gotta hire a, you know, security chief. And so I just hired a security chief. But I hadn't gotten to the point of building an army because I was focused on other stuff, you know?
Right.
Anyway, it's incredibly satisfying.
You got a plan for things, dude.
Huh?
You got a plan for things.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, I thought I was planning pretty well, but it just got away from me. So next time will be nice. Better. Next time will be better.
Nice. Well, I've been playing, tabletop bowling.
Tabletop bowling.
It's not a card game. It's not a board game. It's a, wooden game. It's okay. A lane uh-huh. with plastic bowling pins and, metal steely, as they used to call them, bowling, marble. You just flick that at it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so
how's that going?
It's pretty fun. No, it's just okay. My kid thinks it's the coolest game ever.
Well, yeah. Sure. Okay, is this like big scale, or is this like, how big is this?
It's like, I mean, it's like a foot long, maybe.
Yeah, like 12 yeah. 14 inches, something. Okay. Yeah. So it's not like the big kids bowling thing, plastic pins that are 12 inches tall each. And
No, it's I got it at Five Below. I get a lot of games there. I go there about once every 2 weeks and look at their games
because
they get a lot of random stuff in.
Yeah.
And then none of it's like great stuff, but it's good for kids.
Sure.
And it's like weird stuff. So yeah. Like tabletop bowling. Right. So, yeah, it's not bad.
Good.
Yeah. Good times.
Excellent. Yeah.
We haven't gotten to play any other fun games. We've tried. I'm trying to do some play testing too and having trouble with that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so good times.
Right on. Yeah, well, over Christmas Day at the in-laws, Christine's family's house, so I played some Texas Hold'em with my father-in-law and a couple of my sister's in-laws' boyfriends.
For, like, real money?
We, you know, played for change, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, just pennies and nickels, dimes, quarters. But as always happens with me when I play Hold'em, I get to a point where I'm done playing, and so I just go all in until I... You know, and it's occasionally you go all in when you want to lose and you actually end up winning the hand because you scare somebody away or something, you know, and that's frustrating. So in this case, I managed to go all in just one time and lost. And
they're like, oh, you lost. And you're like, I did.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, you're right, guys. But actually, you guys lost because I'm going upstairs and I'm the dealer. So you guys can take over dealing if you want, or you can quit too. They just quit because they don't like shuffling or dealing cards. So
wow, yeah. What a thing not to like enough to not play a game.
Yeah, right. So I was like, really? You're just all right. I guess that's it. I lost a dollar.
Interesting. Yeah. See, now that actually, that's an interesting thing. Would you call no, they're not. Say, would you call cards bits? Cards are a functional thing of the game, though, right? Mm-hmm. And shuffling makes the game less fun, which brings up our topic this week.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
So our feature of the week. We asked Twitter, like we do many times when we're unprepared. We say, Twitter, save us.
Help us do something because we don't want to make an effort.
And yes, and well, that's our effort is we ask Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt Riddle, who probably doesn't even listen to the podcast because he's a big jerk.
Yep.
You can tell him we said that, Ben Pinchback,
ugly
since
too.
I know you're listening.
Ugly jerk.
Ouch, man. He tweeted to us, do bits, the type of bits you have... how nice they are, whatever. Do they affect enjoyment in the game? And if so, how much? And then he made sure to let us know that if we wanted the correct answer, we could let him know and he would come on and give the correct answer. Well, we don't really care about your opinion, Matt. So
no, because you don't listen to the show, so you're not important to us.
Yeah. Anyway, so no, Matt's a nice guy. But I don't think he listens to the show because he's punk. But anyways.
So let's define bits before we answer this question.
Bits. So I think of bits as components. Like
that's an awfully broad definition.
If I say game components, do you know what I mean?
No, because game components could be a board and the box that it comes in.
Okay.
And, you know, those are...
No, a box is not a game component.
Okay.
Unless the box has a board on it or you...
What if there's something in the rule that says when you're done with something, throw it back in the box. Then it's a container for the things that are discarded from the game. And then it becomes a component.
I don't disagree with you, but never does it say that. That's not true. Some games do.
Lots of games say,
put it back in the box.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when that card is used, throw it back in the box because it's out of the game.
You will not use it this game.
Well, that's different. You will not use it this game is different from you've already used it and you're not going to get to use it again.
Okay. So anyway, let's answer this question.
Yeah. So I think, well, I want to continue defining bits first.
Well, let's do that.
Because I don't think this is...
This is thrilling.
Yeah, well, you're thrilling. Hey, stop making noise by playing with that cap. You know what? I will walk out of this room.
No, you won't.
It's a good way to start the year, huh?
It is.
So to identify bits, when I think of bits, I think of small pieces.
Okay? Yes.
I think of cardboard tokens, chipboard tokens.
Yes.
I think of meeples,
standees.
Plastic pieces, standees. Yeah, I think of basically anything that's not...
Dice,
cards.
Or a board.
Pawns. I guess even pawns could be bits, depending.
Pawns are bits, dude. That's like the same thing.
All right.
Dice, board, cards. Other than that, I say that's all bits.
So bit is any kind of game component that is not a board, it's not a card, it's not dice.
That's how we're defining bits. That may not be how you define bits, listeners, but that's okay. That's how we're going to define bits for this conversation.
You're just making this decision for me.
Well, we kind of made it together.
Well, I agree with you, but... Okay.
I just wanted the listeners to know they didn't have to tell us that we were wrong about what bits are.
All right.
This is how we're defining bits.
Okay, so the question then was, do bits make a game better?
No, do they... Let me read the exact question from this jerk. He said, do bits affect game enjoyment? If so, how much? I think that's an... I think there's an easy answer to that question.
Okay, and what's the easy answer?
Yes.
Why?
Well, a couple reasons. And this is why I think it's an absolutely definite yes. One is playability. If you have super cheap bits, right, they can be hard to use. I remember I did a prototype one time, and I had a bunch of little tokens, and they were real small. It was that Fortress game I made, the big one where you...
Yeah, they weren't even tokens. They were just cut up squares of paper.
Well, it was cardstock, but yeah.
Oh, well.
And it was really hard to use, right? Because you're trying to pick it up, and I can't. And that was because they were crappy bits, right?
Sure.
Now, if those had been like super sweet bits with super sweet minis or something, it'd have been easier, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which would have made it more fun because it was easier. You're not worried about this stupid stuff. Am I wrong?
I don't think it would have made that game more fun.
Fair enough. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
In general.
Yeah.
So I guess let's define this. If the game is already good, if the game is already fun,
yeah,
do the bits make a difference?
Mm-hmm. I think if the game needs bits in order to play...
Right.
Okay. If components apart from board, cards, dice are required for the game, then the better the quality of those bits, then the more likely the game is to be enjoyable.
Okay. I would like to tell you you're wrong here. So I think you're not wrong, but I think that there's an exception to that. You said the word need. If the game needs certain bits, now, I would argue that Camel Up is more fun because of that pyramid thing, right? It's unnecessary.
Completely unnecessary.
It could be a bag.
Could easily be a fabric bag, opaque.
But the game is more fun because everybody giggles when they get to use the pyramid. Or they go, pyramid. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
Though,
see, so I think right there, that's...
Well, but that pyramid is kind of awkward to hold and awkward to use.
Everybody loves the pyramid, dude.
You know, I loved it the first time. I didn't love it as much the second time.
You'd rather it was just a bag?
Because it's awkward, because it's so wide in the base, and you got to hold it upside down, and then you put it down flat, and then you reach under it, and you squeeze the little thing that's rubber banded on there, and meanwhile, it's hard to hold that way.
You're such a whiner.
I think it's honestly the use of it is poorly engineered, personally.
Okay.
I mean it's eye-catching and it's mm-hmm. it's striking on a table, and when somebody's walking past that, they see that and go, "Oh, what is that?" But I think realistically it could be better designed.
Okay. So let's go with a different thing. Let's go with something you could not say would be designed better that's a little more personal.
Okay.
Monster Tea Party.
Okay.
The teacups.
Yeah.
Everybody loves the teacups.
Everyone loves teacups.
They are eye-catching. People see those and they go, oh. But people actually enjoy the teacups. People enjoy the papercraft teacups you've put into that game.
That's true. They do.
And the game is more fun because you're putting things in the papercraft teacups.
Mm-hmm.
At least I feel like it is when I'm playing. I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. look, it's in the thing with the thing.
It helps reinforce the theme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd say it makes the game more enjoyable.
Yeah. Well, but in that's a case where... Well, you know, you're making a good point here because Epic Monster Tea Party technically does not need the teacups.
It needs a receptacle.
You could easily just put those on top of your character card there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it benefits from it because it contains them and it makes them easier to dump into your bag. But it doesn't technically need them. But
thematically, it makes the game way more...
Thematically, it adds to that. Functionally, it makes the game easier to play because it's easy to just pick up and dump that teacup.
Right.
You know?
But if they were just... I don't know. I can't think of what an equivalent you would use. I mean...
Actual plastic teacups?
Well, no, but see, because that's even better bits, technically. You know what I mean? Because it's... I'm saying if you had something like... What would be another way to store those... that would be equally make the game easy. I don't know.
I'm not sure. Well, it'd be some kind of receptacle. You know what? Here's a thought. Okay. Great Heartland Hall and Company.
Okay.
Right. Okay. That game, I don't know what it was originally supposed to have for your little player pawn.
Uh-huh.
But through the Kickstarter and ever since then, they managed to get to a point where they would do little... 18 Weeples,
yeah,
you know, a little truck, wooden trucks, right? And you move those around the board, and that's way cooler, right? That's way cooler than just like pawn, generic pawn, or, you know, a cardboard standee or something. Mm-hmm. Gitarski retweeted a picture from somebody who had 3D printed a custom truck Weeple or 18 Weeple uh-huh. With the trailer end of it cut out so you could put the cubes that you're picking up and delivering
right.
directly into the trailer of the truck. And I think that makes it even cooler.
Yeah, I think so too.
I'm not sure if that makes it more fun. See, maybe that's the problem I'm having here, because fun and cool, or fun versus appealing visually, are kind of different things.
Well, see, I guess so. Here's this is kind of a difference too. Like, since I'm so concerned about theme and theme of games, and uh-huh. theme is what ropes me in,
mm-hmm.
having those better bits that reinforce the theme make mm-hmm. me enjoy a game more. Like, you know, here's another good example.
Yeah.
A lot of games have scoring tokens, right?
Yeah.
Now, you could just use a pen and paper, and the game would literally be exactly the same functionality.
Yeah.
But we don't, because we enjoy the game more if we don't have to do that.
Sure.
Now, you could make an argument that maybe it's a little easier, but honestly, there are some games where I don't think it is easier. It would actually be easier to just have paper and a number.
Yeah. See, I want to say that good bits are always going to make a game better. Always. I want to say that, but I'm not sure if I can say that truthfully.
I don't think that's true. Good bits will always make a good game better, I think. Or mostly. Not always, but most of the time, good bits will make a good game better.
How about
but
this?
A bad game will not be better because of good bits.
Good bits makes your game more likely to sell.
Well, that's true.
Good, attractive, sexy bits, you know? Right. that look good, look on the table, feel good in your hand, you know. I call those sexy bits, right? Is that an okay description to put on those, you know?
Sure.
I think that makes a game instantly more appealing to engage with. And yeah, so.
All right.
I don't think it's just, I just don't think it's that simple an answer is yes. No. It's not as simple as yes.
I agree with you. I think it's a little more a complex answer.
Yeah.
If anybody wants to know Matt Riddle's answer, tweet him and ask him.
Yeah, we don't care what he has to say. No.
If I see the tweet, I'm just going to delete it.
Yeah.
It's going to block it from my timeline.
Yeah, maybe I should just block that guy 100% at this point. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, that Matt guy with his games and his opinions about bits. I'm telling you.
Yeah, man. So, anyways, yeah. So that was a little bit of a quick topic, but we've got some voicemails and some emails we're going to go through later. So, but let's have you pitch a game first.
Oh, okay. As I do sometimes, I was, man, Christmas, right? You know, I had 4 days off around Christmas and ended up most of that time just either sitting on the couch staring at the TV or sitting in my office staring at the computer screen playing Prison Architect, and just did not think about this show at all.
Not surprising.
I thought about it for about 2 hours when I had to edit an episode and then promptly forgot all about it again. So I had nothing to pitch, and then I realized last night, oh crap, I need to pitch a game today. And so as I do, I went to BoardGameMiser.com and said, please help me, BoardGameMiser. And I clicked that button. And a theme popped up that was pure nonsense. But something about the structure of that nonsense really, really charmed me. And the theme that it presented was Diligence Shark.
Diligence Shark.
Yeah, and maybe those are two separate themes. Maybe Diligence is one and Shark is another one. I don't know, but the way it was presented, it was Diligence Shark. And I thought, huh, Diligence Shark. A shark that is, you know...
Diligent.
You know, he has a character which contains diligence. I don't know. What is that? I don't know. So it got me excited. And the mechanic paired with it was Press Your Luck.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't remember last time. Have I done really a Press Your Luck game much?
You had that shop class dice game? That
yeah.
Press Your Luck game.
Yeah, okay. And I mean, and there's a little bit of Press Your Luck in Tea Party.
A dash.
Right. So what is it about Press Your Luck games that makes me want to use dice? I don't know.
But it just feels like...
It feels good, right?
A lot of Press Your Luck games use dice, first of all.
Right, because there's random nature to it, right?
Right.
And it just feels good.
I mean, I guess you could have a Press Your Luck game where you just keep drawing stuff, like from
you
a
could.
Stack, but...
Yeah.
And that actually sounds kind of interesting, because, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
anyways.
So Diligence Shark, Press Your Luck, and my brain immediately went to dice. So I'm calling this is a dice game, Press Your Luck dice game called Diligence Shark, and that's a terrible name. But, anyway. Okay, so and I think back to like old cartoons, like old Looney Tunes things or whatever, and you see those cartoon where there's a little fish swimming through the ocean, and then another bigger fish comes along, eats him, and then a bigger fish eats that one, and then a bigger fish eats that one, and you know, so you have this chain of big fish eating little fish.
Maybe it's even a super crappy Star Wars movie.
Maybe is that in a Star Wars?
In Phantom Menace, man.
Does it?
There is always the bigger fish, says Qui-Gon Jinn.
Oh. I've forgotten that.
Misa don't like fish.
What? Say it again?
No. I don't know why you need me to say it again. I said it once and you recorded it.
Yeah, but it'd be funnier. the more takes we have, the more I can put at the end of the show. Yeah. Okay, so Diligent Shark. So the players are sharks swimming in the ocean. And they want to eat a lot of fish. But they can only ever eat one fish at a time. So the idea is that they're stalking this one fish, and they want to wait for that fish to eat a smaller fish, so they can basically eat two fish for the price of one, okay? Because they only get one bite,
okay,
one gulp, okay? So if I can eat a big fish that ate a smaller fish, I get in that one bite, I get two fish. And if
you're not wrong.
And if the big fish ate a fish smaller than that, and that fish ate another one smaller than that, then in one bite, I could eat three fish. You know, this is the idea. Okay, so... in this game, there are five levels of fish. Okay, well, I'm just going to call them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Keep it easy.
Shark is the fifth, or
Shark is the player.
Okay, so Shark is like the sixth. Level.
Yeah, it's number six. So we can think of these as prey fish.
Okay,
you know. Okay, so there are five prey in the game, and there are five dice in the game, but there and so it's not that there's one fish on each face of the die, because there's some structure to that. But basically, theoretically, there are, on each die there could be five different fish and one sixth side, which is a hooked icon. Okay.
Oh.
Hooked. All right.
Sounds like a bad thing.
It is a bad thing. So the idea here, and I've got a structure here. Let me tell you, but you know, each die does not necessarily have all five fish on it. I think I already said that. So for example, one die would have two of fish one, one of fish two, nothing of fish three, one of fish four, one of fish five, right? So there, in the end, there's the same number of fish across the whole game, across mm-hmm. all five dice, but every die does not have every fish on it.
Right.
And each die is more likely to get one kind of fish than the other one.
Right.
Okay.
And the dice are like color coded, so you know that.
Yeah,
there's kind of like zombie dice does.
Yeah, well, you know, whatever. However that would make out. And then there's a hooked icon. Okay. So at the start of your turn, you roll all five dice.
Okay.
Okay. You roll them out there and you get whatever you get. If you get a hook, that hooked die is locked.
Right.
You can't, it's gone. Because basically, a fisherman has spotted you.
Right.
Okay. That's locked for the rest of the game. If you end up locking three hooks, you're caught and your turn ends. And right. if you haven't eaten something, you lose your opportunity to eat something that turn. Okay.
Right.
You can also choose to lock as many other dice as you want on your turn and then re-roll the rest as many times as you want. But you can only lock one and one two and one three and one four and one five, and you have to lock them in order. Okay. So if I'm rolling my die and I lock a two, I cannot now lock a one.
Right.
I don't have the option because I've already targeted that number two to be.
Yep. That's your fish. You're watching him now.
I'm watching him now. I'm following him.
As soon as he gets eaten, you're grabbing the next one, right?
Right.
That's the idea.
Exactly. So what I want to do is I want to keep rolling these dice, and I want to lock one, two, three, four, five in a row without getting any hooks. And then at any time, I can choose to end and eat what I've got.
Right.
And I'm going to score 1 point for each fish that I eat. Okay. Right. So in an ideal situation, I'd lock one, two, three, four, five. I'd eat them all. I get 5 points. Okay. But let's say I get to the point where I've locked one, two, three, and then on my last turn, I roll two hooks. Okay. Now, at that point, I'm fully locked.
Right.
You know? And I only have two hooks. I don't have three hooks, but I can't do anything else. I'm hooked. That's the end. It turns over. All my dice are locked up, and I didn't eat when I had the chance, so it's too late.
I see. So basically, if the turn ends with you rolling a hook.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ouch.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, press your luck. It's got to be a little bit punishing.
That's really hard press your luck, though.
Yeah. And so everybody around the table takes turns, first person to get 15 is the winner is kind of what I'm thinking.
Cool.
Real simple, you know, real basic. I haven't tested it. It'd be really easy to test the D6s, right. You know, but that's
actually,
basically the
it's
idea.
It's a cool concept, I think.
I think it's all right.
Locking them in order to get the bigger fish.
Yeah.
Eating
yeah.
the smaller fish.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
You know, it's real simple.
I don't really have any comments for it just because, other than that, I think it's mean that if I basically every turn I have a 1 in 6 chance of hosing myself, but I guess that makes sense. So,
mm-hmm. And I have to have a hook on everything. And it occurred to me that if I get to the point where I've locked three numbers, then, and if I have to have three hooks in order to get caught, then once I lock three, I would just keep on rolling until I get what
forever.
I want.
Just like a jerk, yeah.
Right. So it has to be.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So it has to kind of end that way. I don't think I have a choice. Now, alternatively, I could put a sixth die in there that would offer a little bit more variety. So you could get to that point, or maybe even seven dice. So you get to the point where you get five dice locked and might still be able to get three. But, you know, I don't know if there's really much value in that.
No, I'd stick with what you got. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just, thought it'd be fun to try a little dice game. I feel like this whole episode is just flying by, though, and we're not talking enough. Like, this is such a simple pitch, such a short topic. I don't know. Are we cheating people in the new year?
Yeah, I think so.
Aww.
Welcome to BTG, where we cheat you in the new year. No, we've got some questions here we're going to go through. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Diligence Shark is the name of that game. coming soon to stores near you.
You need to think of a better name than that.
Oh yeah, that's a terrible name. Yeah.
You could just call it Bigger Fish. It's not good, but it's better than Diligent Shark.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Bigger Fish. I don't know.
Bigger Fish. All right.
So, okay, you have an email.
A couple emails.
Do it.
Morgan Jansen, let's just call the person Morgan, said, "Hey, guys. A friend turned me on to the show several weeks ago, and it immediately became my go-to commute material, which is awesome.
Hooray!
Unfortunately, when I get to work, I am more interested in thinking about games than doing my job." Hey,
hey.
That makes three of us.
Sorry.
I'm about halfway through the archive, so my apologies if I've already talked about some of the stuff in my email. No, that's cool, dude. I recently played a number of variations on 4 or 5 in a row games, like Quarto, Goblet, Pentago. What I like about these kinds of games is that they rely extremely on simple and usually intuitive rules. Put a piece on the board and done. But you can yield pretty complicated choices on board positions. Maybe the ultimate example of this is Go. Absolutely.
Yep.
If you haven't already, I'd be interested in hearing you talk about these sort of pure minimalist strategy game. If only to say why you don't like them and figure out how to make them more gamery. Actually, so I'm going to stop there and we'll come back to this. He's got some more stuff after this, but I think that's something for us to talk about for a minute.
Yeah.
One thing we have said on the show, at least I think we've said on the show, is that simple idea is one of the hardest things to capture.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're like, it takes a really good designer to make a simple idea and a simple game that has all sorts of crazy ramifications from those couple little choices.
Yeah.
That's hard to do. That's something I aspire to, and I know you do as well.
Absolutely. And I'm trying to do some of that with this fighting game right now.
Right. Yep.
You know, a simple structure that with a lot of options that is compelling, but that's tough, man.
It's tough.
It's really tough. I get excited when I find a game like that.
Yeah. So, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, no, we certainly like those games, and some of them are not gamery, but they can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I think sometimes to make them gamery, you just give them a little, you just give them some, you know, good themes. I think that makes a difference. That was something with your fighting game that you thought a lot about. I was like, what theme do I give it?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, a lot of things, like when we talk about Go, a lot of games of that type, though, end up being kind of abstract games. And abstract games, just in that presentation, are not as, I guess, not quite as approachable as something fantasy themed, you know? So, and it's difficult to give them a theme. Like chess, for example, chess is theoretically about a war between these two rival kingdoms or something,
right.
You know? But
very abstract.
But whoever thinks of it that way, it's not.
No one.
And that theme is there just to help identify the different pieces at a glance.
That said, for chess, there's a lot of sets of chess. Like,
well, right, yeah, and it's
Star
easy to retheme.
Wars or
but,
Lord of the Rings. But I mean, that helps you, brings you more into the idea of my king versus yours, you know?
Yeah, but ultimately it ends up still just being chess every time. It's just a different looking chess.
It's true.
You know, so it's just tough with those sorts of things that abstract nature, it divorces itself from a familiar theme that people kind of, you know, get excited about.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
So, he suggested a possible mechanic of the week or design challenge is a movable board. As opposed to building the board with tiles, in Pentago, the board is split into quadrants. Each move you make must rotate one of these pieces 90 degrees. I've seen Connect 4 where you can flip the screen 180 degrees. And then he ends with, "I don't think I'll be in your area anytime soon, but if you ever have an event in Southern California, me and my friends will be sure to show up. Thanks a lot, and keep it up."
Cool. You know, I didn't Connect 4 that you could turn upside down. That sounds great. Wouldn't all the pieces fall out?
Yeah, I wonder how that works. I was just thinking the same thing.
There's got to be some kind of a latch or something. That's
cool. They must
cool.
lock into place or something.
Boy, that would be a pain to keep track of that game. Connect Four. I mean, I already, for whatever dumb reason, I struggle with Connect Four. I feel like I'm really bad at that game.
Well, Connect Four, there's
an
optimal strategy where you literally can't lose right. as long as the person doesn't know the optimal strategy.
Right. Yeah. As long as you're playing against somebody who is not familiar with that, then it's impossible for them to win. But I don't know why, but I struggle with Connect Four a lot. I feel stupid for that. So we should talk about movable board pieces. Maybe like a board you can rearrange mid-game.
Yeah, that could be cool.
Yeah, that's a good theme. Good pitch challenge.
I like that. Yeah. Jonathan here sent us a message. Says, Hi, Jonathan. Guys, the Wikipedia extends perfect information to include game with chance events.
Really?
Yeah, so then he sent us the Wikipedia link, so I'm pulling that up right here. Sorry, I forgot that he did that. Perfect information is a situation in which an agent is theorized to have all the relevant information with which to make a decision. It has implications in several fields. Oh, okay. So what he's saying is, like, you could have a game where... a good example is actually your fighting game. The original version we talked about that was the original version you had was perfect information. As long as you could memorize the cards that were played, as long as you could count cards, it was perfect information.
Right.
Because, you always knew what cards were in my hand as long as you could remember the cards I'd played before. So it includes that. So what it's saying is, you know what I mean? There's also, does that make sense?
I'm not sure how you would trigger random events in a perfect information game.
Yeah, I'm a little not sure about that either.
That's, I mean, maybe there's a game that does that in a cool way, but I'm struggling to
Get Bit, which I haven't played, but David Schott's a nice guy and the game looks fun. It's that game where the shark is chasing around the Lego dudes.
Okay.
Trying to eat them.
All right, I'm not familiar with that.
So in game theory, an extensive form game has perfect information if each player, when making any decision, is perfectly informed of all the events that have previously occurred. So that's what I was talking about with that, what I was saying about your game.
So if every player is perfectly informed of every event that has already occurred.
Right.
So it's not saying they don't know what's coming. It's saying they know what's happened already. Then that would encompass every game or a lot of games.
Yeah.
I feel like that's...
Now I'm confused.
Not quite a fair...
Yeah. I feel like I'm confused now. Hey! Moving on.
Okay.
So Get Bit falls into that category. In Get Bit, you have information that was used previously, so you know what other player has... what the other player has... It just also has a simultaneous move. Okay. So that's what he's saying. With the idea is this, right? At least this is how I just understood it. If we both put cards down at the same time and then flip them over, even though I don't know what you're playing, so I don't have the information on what you're playing, we could still call that perfect information because I know what your options are. If you and I have the same five cards in our hand and we put both those cards down, like one card of each down, I know what your five options are. So that is a form of perfect information because I know what all your choices are. I don't know which one you choose until we both choose at the same time, but that should allow me to strategize based on that. I still don't feel like that's perfect information, but I do understand how, I get how you could extend the definition there, but I disagree with Wikipedia on that. To me, perfect information is I know everything. I know what you do before I do it.
We've always defined perfect information before as no randomness. That it's all the interaction is based on decisions made by the players.
There's no randomness in that.
Yeah.
Because if I have a card and it's face down, but I chose it.
Yeah.
And we each have the same five options.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't even have to have the same five options. I just have to know what your five options are.
Yeah, well, I think my point is that what you just read there from Wikipedia is saying that's not exclusive for a perfect information situation. I mean, you could say that about any game. You know, that in any game, I know a lot of the things that you're going to do. In many cases, I know all of the options that you might take. But I'm not sure that I don't feel like that's exclusive.
Well... You have to remember, though, random events ruin perfect information. So if I have to roll dice, it's no longer a perfect information game. For instance, Settlers of Catan would be a perfect information game. Well, you know what? Let's save this for next week when we talk about our topic.
Okay.
So,
all right.
All right. He said a game or a game that's perfect information would be Hive.
Hive. I don't like Hive.
I don't like Hive either, but unless you design Hive and you listen to the show and then great game. No, really, I'm just kidding. I don't really, it's just not for me.
Me too. It's a fine game and I get it, but something about it just doesn't do it for me.
Just doesn't do
and
it.
And I really
me.
Like the tiles. I like how tactile it is.
I hate it.
It feels good, but
I don't hate the game. I've only played like once and it just didn't do it for me.
I've played it like 7 or 8 times and I get it, but I just something about it just doesn't do it for me.
Okay, and we've got voicemails here. Let's play them.
Okay.
BTG, Len Pedro. How's it going, man? So, just listened to the podcast while I was driving and I just stopped, so I'm taking a moment to give you guys a call. You guys talking about the fighting game again, perfect information, but because of the limited number of cards, not a lot of options, and eventually know what everyone's move is. And I'm sure this has been suggested before, so this is nothing new, but I'm putting it out there. What if you just doubled the cards and made 14 cards? And in the 14 cards, you had like a high punch, high kick, low punch, low kick, and then the mids, you know? Only one super attack. The blocks would be the same. And then you had 4 other action cards, you know, for a total of 18. You could even just do, you know, maybe do less than that. Take and just make 7 more cards for a total of 10. Basically increase the deck size so that when you're cycling through there, the choices and the options are going to vary a little bit. And then you almost do like a deck building style where you go through all your cards and when you're done, you shuffle them before you put them down again. I don't know. Whatevs. Talk to you later. Bye.
Well, thank you for pulling over.
Always good to pull over. Be safe.
I think if you added more cards, it would pretty fundamentally change the structure of that game.
Right. It's certainly an option, but you're going for a very tight, compact game.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what you're describing is not necessarily a bad idea, but it's a different game than I was looking to create. It changes that idea of cycling through the cards and play 3 and they go down and you can't use them the next turn, but you get them the next time. That would eliminate that option. So you would need, 4 or 5 turns before you'd be able to, get back to those original things. And so it would make choices
would be a lot harder. You'd also have a lot more options, which could make it a little more AP, you know?
Like, yeah. Yeah. I'm terrified of AP. It's something that I struggle to overcome in a lot of my designs, honestly. And sometimes some people are just going to be that way, but I don't want to encourage that. I just think that becomes a different game that I'm not so excited about.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
it's a good suggestion. I mean, it just doesn't really fit with what you're trying to do.
Yeah, but I need to get that combo structure set up so that I can
test that.
I know. Yeah, it's just, you know, holidays, man.
Whatever.
It gets busy.
You gotta get tested, man. Unpub is like a month and a half away.
I know, but I was playing Prison Architect.
I got two new, like I have a new game I'm working on with Andy that's like new that we want to have at Unpub, and it's daunting.
And I just got a PS4, so I gotta play Far Cry 4, man. Oh, come on, give me a break.
Shut up. All right, hey, we have another voicemail.
What?
Hey guys, this is Drew. I am a longtime listener, first time caller. But I was just listening to your latest episode and Jason made the comment talking about addictive video games and it just lit up a fireball in my mind. This is actually a really interesting phenomenon that's being studied in video game world right now called flow. And there's actually a research book by that name. I would love to give you the author, except I am in the car, and it's really long and hard to remember, and I think Polish? So even if I tried to say it right, I probably wouldn't be able to spell it out for you. But anyway, I think there's a couple of things in video games that make them more able to get this kind of thing across in board games. And one of them is that the feedback from a video game is instantaneous, right? So you do something to the game, and it immediately sends you something. The quality of these games increases one for one with your ability to grow as a player. And again, that's something that's kind of really hard to design in a board game setting. But I think we can still find a couple of examples, and I wanted to share my personal favorite one with you. When I was growing up, there was a little puzzle at my uncle's house. It was really super simple. It was just a piece of string that was hanging from the ceiling on his back porch, and at the end of the string was a little brass loop. And, you know, you would try and swing that loop with the piece of string and try and get the loop to catch on a hook that was connected to the post on the other side of the porch. And, you know, every time that you successfully hooked it, you would have to stand back a little bit further so that your swing arc would get longer and harder to really predict. And I just remember being on my uncle's porch for just hours and hours trying to master this stuff thing. But, yeah, I think it's definitely possible. But it's really interesting. Again, if you want to look up that book, I highly recommend it. I just wanted to give you a little bit of food for thought. Great show, guys. Keep doing what you do. Bye.
Cool. Thanks, Drew. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening.
Always awesome to hear from new people.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes, that's
and
fantastic.
And he also said my favorite thing ever, which is long-time listener, first-time caller.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, so so flow. Yeah, it's cool to hear a word applied to that concept, that quick response like he's talking about, in that immediate reward and quick turnover. I think I actually read something from an interview with the designers or the creators of Crossy Road, because I think we're talking about Crossy Road.
Yeah, Crossy Road.
And they were talking, I'm not sure if they used that word flow, but they were talking about the immediate response and the immediate reward and the ability to also immediately start over and try again.
Right.
Yeah. And that.
It's like when you die, like if you die before like 100, I don't even care. I'm just like, oh, start over.
Yeah. Right.
Go.
Yeah. And so that flow that, you know, if you fail, you can immediately start over and try again, and it does not interrupt the flow of the game. And I think that's an excellent point. And he's right that card games and things are difficult to achieve that with, and the more complicated the game, the more and more difficult it becomes. I mean, if you're just swinging a washer that's on the end of a string, that's going to be pretty easy. It's going to swing right back to you, and you go. Dice games facilitate that to a degree, because, okay, I'm just going to pick up the dice and drop them again, and that's easy. So physical things like that are much more prone to that kind of feeling.
Yeah. Also, I really want to play the game with the brass thing on the string, try and hook it. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so dexterity games, I guess, are a little more open to that concept.
Especially ones with easy setup. Like, Click Clack Lumberjack is not that game.
Yeah.
So every time that game ends, I'm like, oh, I got to set it up again.
Right, and same thing with Don't Break the Ice. Yeah.
I'd rather set up Don't Break the Ice twice than Click Clack Lumberjack.
Is it really that pain? It's a pain. Wow.
It's a fun game, but it's a pain to set up.
Okay.
So...
Yeah, you know, that's cool. Cool to know that there's research and conversation going on about that concept right now. Yeah, it's really interesting. I do have a couple of tweets here. This is from our Board Game Links, which I think is also the at Board Game Links on Twitter. Yes. Also, Board Game Izer.
Go to Board Game Links and like us.
Yeah,
gosh, cool, guys. Like, our score is so low, you guys. It's like we don't have all the listeners we have, and I know we have you listeners.
Yeah.
So please go to Board Game Links, give us a little heart. And get us up the chain a little bit. We'd really appreciate it.
Yeah. So he has two questions. First of all, he says, question one, will you ever design an Ameritrash game? Answer, Jason?
I thought that I already did.
Yeah, I'm trying to right now. I think Innkeepers is pretty much Ameritrash.
Better question is, will I ever design a Euro? Probably not. I might try, but I'll get bored with it.
Yeah, I mean...
I started out trying to design Euro games or like real long thinky games, and now I'm just like, I don't have the attention span for that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And I would kind of call Epic Monster Tea Party Ameritrash.
Oh, it's like, it's 100% Ameritrash.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to remember too that we feel like Ameritrash is an enduring term.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that's derogatory at all. So, no.
Some people do, though.
Some people do. So. We do not. No, I would love to. I'm trying all the time to design Ameritrash games and failing more often than succeeding. Rarely succeeding. Haven't yet sold one. That's the story of my life and this podcast. Question two. When you design a game that requires custom dice, do you paste stickers or use a chart?
I've done both. But normally I would rather pay stickers. I
mean, really?
That would be my first choice, but I've used a chart before. So have you.
I almost exclusively use a chart. I rarely ever will put stickers on something just because I don't like to gum up my dice. Even though I have thousands, I have many hundreds of dice.
Most of the time, if I want to use custom dice in a game, it's for aesthetics. It's not for necessity.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I would love for there to be like bullet dice in Gunslinger Ramblers. But if there's not, it ain't the end of the world. You know what I mean? Like, I think when that fortress game that I designed that one time, I had pasted on dice because the pictures made it way easier to know what you were dealing with.
Right.
But like your zombie racing game, we just used dice with a chart and that was fine. In fact, that was most of the game was that was the idea.
It was.
So I think it's fine either way.
Yeah. I prefer a chart just because then a chart is easier for me to change.
Right.
Then having to put new stickers and new labels on a die, and then I don't worry about getting glue or anything on my dice, which it's just so dumb. But I mean, I have dice that I've had since I was like 8 years old, man.
I know.
Yeah. And I love those dice.
That's why you got to buy cheap, crappy dice that you can put. Like, I just buy dollar store dice.
I got plenty of those now. I got a bunch of neon dice, thanks to you.
Yeah. Iron Bruno! So, all right.
Yeah. So I guess that's it then, eh?
That's it
then. We're done for tonight. Okay, well, thanks everybody for listening to the show. We really, really appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at PodcastBTG. Jason is at J.A. Slingerlin, and I'm at poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. You can go to boardgamelinks.com and give us votes on there because we deserve them. Gosh darn it.
Give them to us.
You can also buy our games. Go to buildinggamepodcast.com and order your own copy of Water Balloon Washout and find links to the Game Crafter where you can buy the Rumple Bum Academy for bug-based baking, Epic Monster Tea Party, and finish at the Outrageous
Storytelling Party Game.
Yeah, well, that's good. I was actually going to drop that for the new year.
Last time then.
Okay. Well, I thank you for that. I appreciate it. You can get all those on there. Help us help support the show and get some fun games. Don't forget about Something from Nothing, the bi-weekly video show with Jason, TC, and Chevy, and whatever random guests they can scrounge up at the last second. And they
kind of
every other Sunday night at 8:00 Eastern time. It's a good time always. That's it.
That's it.
Okay, Happy New Year, gang. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Misa don't like fish. Misa don't like...
Matt Riddle